Welcome to Issues in Prison-Based Gerrymandering, a podcast about keeping the Census Bureau's prison count from harming our democracy. The Census Bureau counts people in prison as if they were actual residents of their prison cells, even though most state laws say that people in prison are residents of their homes. When prison counts are used to pad legislative districts, the weight of a vote starts to differ. If you live next to a large prison, your vote is worth more than one cast in a district without prisons. Prison-based gerrymandering distorts state legislative districts and has been known to create county legislative districts that contain more prisoners than voters. On each episode, we'll talk with different voting rights experts about ways in which state and local governments can change the census and avoid prison-based gerrymandering. Our guest today is Janice Thompson, the Executive Director of Common Cause Oregon, here to talk with us about her work on prison-based gerrymandering in Oregon and what she calls the rural fairness differential. Janice, thanks for being here today.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. This is an important topic and good to talk about.
Can you introduce yourself to the people listening and reading in on the internet and tell us about yourself and Common Cause and a little bit about your work there in Oregon?
Sure. Common Cause is kind of slogan, kind of exemplifies what we do, holding power accountable. And I've headed the Common Cause office here in Oregon for a little over a year. But before that, had 10 years working on democracy reform issues, heading up a previous organization. So we got into this particular topic in two ways. One is I got a chance in 2008, 2009 to do just a major review of the wide range of opportunities out there to increase voter participation and involvement in the political process. And in that context, came to review some, the range of issues related to prisoners and voting, and I learned about your organization and this topic of prison gerrymandering. And then the second angle was also work done by a state, well, at the time, a state representative, now a state senator, Chip Shields, who's been leading this effort in the Oregon legislature. And so those two factors merged together, and I have been testifying in support of this legislation that's been introduced by Mr. Shields. Since, like I say, he was first a member of the House and now a member of the Senate.
So you've been working on that for a long time. Can you talk a little bit about how the campaign there in Oregon has developed and where the support is coming from? I know that's your progress in Oregon is of interest to a lot of the states that are looking to emulate what Oregon and a few other states have done.
Well, I think Senator Shields has, really done good legwork to try to introduce his bills with, a range of support, and has pulled in support from folks within his district, particularly the Urban League of Portland and the African American Chamber of Commerce. I've been doing some work trying to increase the profile of this issue in rural Oregon, where a lot of the prisons are, as well as with a particular focus on how it plays out with local government redistricting. So it's growing.
Could you talk about that a little bit? Because there's a particularly dramatic example in eastern Oregon. How prisons affect local redistricting in eastern Oregon.
Yes. I mean, one thing that's important to realize is redistricting, pertains to the congressional districts, to legislative districts, but local governments do it for their city councils, and if a county is elected on a district basis. So a prison in a particular community can have quite a dramatic impact on the local level of redistricting. And so there's one community in Pendleton where the city council district where the prison is really kind of creating kind of a growing disparity in terms of really how residents of that district are being represented in the city council compared to others.
So this actually is pretty dramatic in the city of Pendleton because they, while they haven't updated their legislative district boundaries in a while, assuming that they, while city of Pendleton hasn't updated their legislative district boundaries in a while, going forward into this current round of redistricting, if they use the prison population to draw the city council wards, they're going to draw one city council ward that's about 28% prisoners. So every three people who live next to the prison are going to have as much say as four people who live in other parts of the city on city affairs. That's a pretty serious impact.
Right. And that's the kind of data that gets people's attention. And it just speaks to needing to think more broadly about redistricting than just how it plays out regarding legislative and congressional districts.
Please, Janice.
Well, it also provides, I think, an interesting kind of organizing opportunity to legislators in that area who may be resistant to changing how prisoners are addressed in redistricting. When they think about it only in terms of the congressional and legislative redistricting, but if they hear from folks in their district who are coming at it from a, geez, we don't think this is fair in our local community, it just opens their eyes a little bit and I think can just help move the issue along, which is good.
I think that's a great strategy, Janice, and it's one I think worked out really well in Maryland and New York, where people continually said, look, the biggest numerical impact from prison-based gerrymandering is at the local level, so let's fix that. And some of the people who very early on, actually in New York, who did most of the work on prison-based gerrymandering were all people in rural communities who saw this massive effect. They did more work early on than the people in New York City did.
Right.
And I think that has to be a key part of why we fix prison-based gerrymandering, because of this impact on local government. It's also something else interesting I've noticed in Oregon is how the debate about the fairness on individual Senate districts, because we've seen this argument in a couple of states, but it's really kind of vivid in Oregon because of some of the unique things in Oregon relating to how your how rural parts of your state
right.
are. Because we've seen this argument that people oppose reform because they say rural districts are already too big and it takes too long to drive around my district to meet my constituents.
Right.
And these state senators often argue that not padding their districts with prison populations would make that problem worse.
Right.
Is that a legitimate concern?
It's an issue. It's a legitimate issue that needs to be addressed in a different way. This is not like an either or. What's going on here is actually all over the country. There are some states with really big legislative districts that do generally affect the ability of their elected leaders to carry out their official duties. So when you think about it, there are urban districts where it might take 30 minutes to drive from end to end. In rural legislative districts, it can be easily 30 miles, 60 miles, 100 miles between meetings to which an elected official needs to travel to do their job representing their district. So that's, the dynamic that makes this a genuine issue and one that is true in many states. In Oregon, it comes up, we are the 10th largest state in the country in terms of square miles. So we have some districts in the eastern part of Oregon that are about as big as some entire states on the East Coast. So not only do legislators in those rural areas have to drive a long way within their districts, they also have a long way to travel to get to the state capitol. But my take on this and how I've testified when this issue has come up in the Oregon legislature is that what we need is a rural fairness differential when providing dollars for legislative office holder expenses. I mean, even before you add in, you know, how the square miles of a district may change if prison gerrymandering is addressed, it does just plain cost more to represent a big district far from the capital compared to small urban districts. And so that needs to be addressed in the resources given to those office holders in those larger districts. And I call that, like I say, the rural fairness differential. And that, and so the need for that is just heightened if indeed the geography of the districts are even larger because of some tweaking in how prisoners are counted for redistricting.
Right, because it's looking at the research that I've done in Oregon, I don't have the numbers for the Senate in front of me, but for the House, the most affected district's about 5% prisoners. So it should have about 5% more people. Maybe that would mean it would be 5% bigger in geography. But these districts are so much larger than the urban districts that the prison is almost a drop in the bucket.
Exactly.
Are there any states that you know of that do something like this, either by formula or by individual negotiations when they're setting staff budgets for legislatures?
Actually, Oregon does this already a little bit, but it's primarily linked to distance from the capital and recognizing that in a large state, there are just definitely going to be people who have to come farther and, you know, can't go home at night and things like that. So it's already in place a little bit. Where it needs to be expanded is addressing the costs to carry out the official duties as an elected official in districts when they are just plain larger.
Yeah, so the current practice compensates legislators for the costs of getting to the Capitol and for some of those expenses, but doesn't deal with the fact of dealing with their constituents, who are more dispersed, which is kind of interesting because that's what changing the districts is about. And it's been interesting to see this argument in a couple of states where people say, well, there's this current unfairness in the system that it's more work for me to represent my constituents, so I should cheat when it comes time to draw the districts and use prisoners who aren't a part of my district as padding to make my job easier. And what I think what's really interesting about the proposal that you're putting forth is that it takes this very real problem that exists and it proposes a solution that responds in kind.
Right.
The problem of counting prisoners in the wrong space is to, the solution to counting prisoners in the wrong place is to count them in the correct place.
Right.
The
So when prisoners are counted from where they came before incarceration, it does mean that an already geographically large rural district might get bigger. This is a valid concern. It is just a concern, however, that's best addressed by applying a rural fairness differential and providing money for legislators to carry out their official duties, not by tweaking how the redistricting is done.
Right. That makes a lot of sense because it takes the problem that these legislators address and it comes up with this. The rural fairness differential speaks directly to the problem that these legislators have raised.
Right. And it's actually a valid problem even before the discussion related to prisons and redistricting. So it's a matter of, it's an existing problem. It gets highlighted when people start to talk about how not counting prisoners in potentially an already large rural district just could increase the geographic size of that. It's just that there's a better solution that doesn't involve instituting kind of unfairness. I mean, you know, the Supreme Court has just been clear that districts need to have equal number of residents so that a vote cast in one part of the state is worth the same as a vote cast in another area. So this is a basic fairness issue. It means that prisoners should be counted where they lived before incarceration. it's just that that it would be good, especially since that idea triggers heightened concern about the cost of these big districts, that is that for that idea should be accompanied by providing elected officials in those large rural districts additional resources as a rural fairness differential in the legislative budgeting process to deal with their increased costs of representing those big districts.
So it sounds to me like you've identified a couple ways in which rural people benefit by ending prison-based gerrymandering. One is this concept of just that fairness in districting is good for everybody and is good for the purity of our decisions. But two, it would solve this really dramatic problem in places like Pendleton. But third, that it has the question of addressing prison-based gerrymandering might help raise the question, raising the question of prison-based gerrymandering might raise the separate question of what's the fairest way to help rural legislators do their duties.
Exactly.
It might help put some attention.
Right.
And give them some added momentum at a key time.
Right. The bottom line is that this isn't an either-or situation. We need fair redistricting that counts prisoners where they're from and address the need for larger officeholder budgets in large rural districts where it does simply cost more for the elected official to carry out their official duties.
I think that's a really good solution, Janice, and I'm looking forward to hearing some more updates from you about what happens in Pendleton and what happens in the legislature and with some of the other organizing in Oregon. Would you like to come back again soon?
Sure. We'll keep you posted and circle back when there's more news.
Thanks, Janice.
Thank you.
Let me hit stop.